Welcome back to Crooked Spine Show. Today we talk about child stress. Just like adults, children experience stress too, anywhere from elementary school through junior high and high school, especially. Nerima is a licensed clinical mental health therapist. She has done this for a few years now and understands, as a parent herself, how to help parents understand their children to deal with these stressors, especially starting at 5 years old on up. Sometimes too, as she had said, the stereotype of seeing a therapist, especially for your children, might be overwhelming or embarrassing. It is not anymore. Helping your child as even an adult deal with conditions, medical conditions, or mental health conditions early help parents and children understand that you can stay healthy and build up their self-esteem and self-confidence so the rest of their lives becomes easier as a parent or a child. In this episode with Nerima, we'll talk about, is your child ready for therapy? Is there a need for therapy for your child? Sometimes getting checked just initially may give you the confidence that your child is okay and has good self-esteem. Second part is how to find the right therapist for your child. Even as a parent, too, being involved with that process relieves some of the stress from the child. Okay. Also, too, a lot of it, as again, stereotypes have to get out there, is how is medication involved with therapy? Is it going to be prudent for one, too, or something that is not needed? Okay. And also, at the very end, we'll talk about proper nutrition and exercise to keep a child's hormones and chemistry balance so overall their body stays healthy, they build self-confidence over time, along with self-esteem. All right, listen to a quick episode, and we'll see you afterwards.
Nerima, how you doing?
Hi, good, how are you?
Dr. Chung, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
The episode from Crooked Spine Show, we want to talk about today is really how do we help children with stress solutions. Nerima, you're a licensed clinical...
Mental health therapist.
Mental health therapist, sorry, I forgot that part.
It's okay.
But overall, what's your first idea for how long have you done this for?
What's your experience?
Let's get some credibility here before we do anything.
Okay. All right. So I've been in mental health for 17 years.
Okay.
And I've been in private practice since 2007.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So started out kind of just doing a little bit in the evenings with another full-time job during the day, built up clientele, built up the practice, and in 2011 went full-time here.
Great. And do you see more children, more adults, more everything, or what do you...
We have a generalist model, so okay. We do see everybody,
okay.
I would say we all have a passion, as I have two other therapists that work for me,
yes.
For children. And
right.
So children and families and trying to make them as healthy as possible.
What's the most common thing you see in here with children?
We see co-parenting situations when parents have divorced.
Yes.
And we also see children with anxiety, children with depression, issues going on in school.
Okay. Now, what age group is that usually, or is that just vary?
It varies a little bit, but typically children are most ready for therapy around age 5.
Okay.
And then we see them all the way up.
So let's say like 5 to 10, mm-hmm. How do you treat them a certain way? For example, so while my audience is senior audience too, with a competent therapist, what's the best way to approach it from a parent perspective? What question should they ask? Is my child ready for therapy?
Mm. Okay, that's a good question. So
I try my best
right?
with my questions.
So, there's still a lot of stigma related around mental
health.
That's
why we're here.
And so we will often have parents who maybe they've waited quite a while. They've been having this issue for some years. And they don't come in because they're afraid of labeling.
They're afraid
that what are people going to think?
Got it. Okay.
The other thing is oftentimes it comes down to parents also feeling a little like, well, if I take my child in for therapy, that means I'm a bad parent.
Got it. Okay.
And I'm here to say that that's not necessarily true. I mean, sure, sometimes parents might contribute to something that's going on, but I say if you're seeking help, then you're a good parent because
we don't know everything, right?
Exactly.
We were kids before we grew up. In as a non-parent, now we're parents, now we go, okay, now what do we do?
Exactly. And our only model is our parents. And so
okay.
It depends, you know, what was that modeling like for you?
Exactly.
And so in terms of when they should come in, I would say a good rule of thumb is if a child's, whatever the issue is, if it's inhibiting their daily life or the family's functioning.
Okay. Got it,
then that's a good time to seek some additional help. And the other thing we always often offer to clients that come in is, you know, you can do a consultation. Talk with us, you know, find out, is this something that I really need to be concerned about? I do have some parents who come in and bring their children and I say, you know, congratulations, your child is a regular 8-year-old boy. And, you know, there isn't really a whole lot going on here that I see from a clinical perspective.
But why not get checked out before it becomes a major issue? where they have to involve medication or other type of interventions for one too.
Exactly.
I think that's huge.
For
and
sure.
With parents, what do you tell parents when they're looking for a therapist? What's the best way to, I guess, search out a therapy for their child?
Well, I think it would be good to go in and, like I said, have consultations. Maybe do two or three. I wouldn't do more than that. Then it gets a little convoluted and you start second guessing yourself.
Yeah.
And really, it's just how you feel. When you walk in the door, you know, how do you feel? When the therapist greets you, what were they like on the telephone? You know, how you can ask questions. You know, any good therapist is okay with you asking questions about their credentials and how long they've worked with children. To come in, ask those questions, get a feel for it. And then another concern that comes up sometimes, parents will say, well, what if my child doesn't want to talk to you? And 9 times out of 10, what we'll do then is have the child come in with the parent. The parent can stay here, especially if it's like separation anxiety or any kind of anxiety related issues going on. Have the child, you know, let the parent stay in with the child. And one of the things I say is with play, for instance, we'll do play therapy with kids because play is the child's language and toys are their words. So when they're doing play, a lot of times the parents can kind of just sit back and I'll interact with the child and then usually we're like 20 minutes into the session and I'll say, would you like mom to continue to stay or do you want to invite her to step out and we can have a little time alone? And they're like, you can go, you know?
Yeah.
So
once you get that comfort level in there. Sometimes I think when the parents come in with the child, the parent might be uneasy, the child might pick up on that.
Exactly.
And now they're both uneasy.
Exactly.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so
okay.
Comfortability and of course too, if the parent's not comfortable, then of course you can stay in the room. But your therapist, I think it's just all about the fit.
And give them time to
just
kind of gel.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned earlier too, a normal 8-year-old boy or girl. Mm-hmm. What is that? What is
<What's>
normal?
Population they use the term normal because it's a little subjective. But sometimes people will come in and say, you know, my child has a hard time paying attention in class.
Okay.
He or she's very fidgety. Things like that. I think the school system sometimes has this, you know, ideology that children are supposed to do that. They're supposed to sit at a desk for hours a day, and that's difficult. That's difficult for me. I can't sit through a 2-hour meeting sometimes without fidgeting or getting up. And so sometimes it might be just a little bit of perspective. But like I said, is it inhibiting their daily life? Is it inhibiting the family's functioning?
Good.
You know, anxiety. Is it that the child, you know, is holding on to you, won't leave you in the mornings, you know, won't go places, so now the family is kind of homebound. Everyone's kind of walking on eggshells because they don't want to upset the child, or maybe a sibling is feeling left out because there's so much attention going to one child because that child's having a pretty significant issue going on.
Okay.
So that's when I would say, come on in, let's talk. You know, it's never going to hurt to talk for a consultation.
What's a good time frame for that to be considered a condition or something to get counseled?
I would say for a kid, you know, for adults, we typically say, oh, if it's been going on 2 weeks, then it's considered, you know, a certain level of functioning. Children take a little bit more time to adapt.
Okay.
I would give kids, you know, if it's a new environment or a new situation or a new thing that's happened, give them a little time to adjust. Lots of reassurance. A lot of validation. It can, as parents, a lot of times we want it to stop. So we tell them things like, stop worrying, you don't have anything to worry about.
Exactly.
So, you know, saying things like, I can see how this would be scary for you. Oh, I understand. Yeah, this is a new thing. Lots of validation. And, you know, if it's going on for 6 weeks.
Okay.
And if it's, again, extreme.
Okay.
So, you know, just for my self-disclosure, my own child had some separation anxiety. And, you know, I start to think about, well, how much is it bothering her? Well, it was just happening in the mornings. She's fine once she gets in the classroom, does her work, getting good grades, socializing, playing on the playground. It's fine. She, you know, it's continuing to decrease. Now, if I was hearing that it was happening, you know, all throughout the day, every day for weeks on end, I'd take her in.
And going from, say, elementary school to a teenager or junior high area, maybe early high school, how is that approached differently?
Well, teenagers, they exhibit it differently. They usually do a little bit more withdrawn behavior, you know, a lot of isolating. And teenagers, their social circle is super important. Developmentally appropriate. And again, as parents, a lot of times we're like, they don't want to spend time with us, but that's normal. And so if you see them not socializing, you know, like maybe they had a group of friends, they're no longer talking with their friends. I know obviously social media is big. You know, they're not communicating any longer with their friends online, or maybe something stressful happened there. That whole thing is going on, you know, with, you know, bullying that goes on social media. You know, I would try to communicate with them. And again, I know it's hard. Teenagers aren't usually big talkers. You know, communicate if something happened, did something happen at school, you know, things like that, to try to get an idea of what might be going on.
Okay.
And again, if you're seeing this happen for weeks on end, then, you know, seeing if they'll come in and talk to someone. Obviously, when you get a teenager, it might be a little more difficult to get them in the door.
Yeah.
But again, once they come in, you know, we typically have tools that help them feel, you know, like this isn't something that's silly or, you know.
This is normal, but how do we deal with this and find a solution for
exactly.
it?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay. And then at that point, same thing, do you bring the... Do parents bring them in, or you kind of see them on their own at that point, or what's...
Parents, yeah. Okay. So okay. One good thing that I'm glad you said that is because...
I know everything. I just...
Right?
No questions asked. Yes. Guessing.
Right? Is kids get better faster if parents are involved.
Okay. Got it.
Okay.
Got
so,
it. So... It's not fresh mode. Hey, here's your therapy appointment. Take care of your problem and come back and you'll be good.
Exactly.
Okay.
And that happens sometimes. And we try to be upfront with that from the beginning to kind of set the scenario. Like, a child is just one part of a family dynamic. There are usually lots of other people involved. Even if it's an only child, you know, there's typically at least a parent. Sometimes there's extended family members that are involved. Okay. And so, kids get better faster if parents are involved. So we'll, the approach here that we try to take is, you know, we do the intake first with the parent to get some background information. And then, you know, then we talk with the child alone if they're okay with that. And then we try to do check-ins with the parents at least monthly.
Okay.
If it's necessary to do it more often, we absolutely will do it more often.
Okay.
And then parents are welcome to have like what we call them collateral sessions. It's like a technical term.
Sure.
But basically they can schedule to have an appointment to come in and maybe talk about the challenges they're having at home so that they can get some ideas on ways to, you know, deal with their child. Now, I will say children do have confidentiality in the state of California, so we can't divulge everything that's talked about, but we most certainly can take in information and give feedback on how to work with those situations.
At that point, you're giving them tools when I go home with my kid, how to communicate with them, how to work out with them, how do I figure out how to make our relationship better?
Yes.
That's perfect.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
When you're talking to kids, what are good, I guess, common tools to give them when they leave here to go and try for a week till they come back or next appointment? What are your initial and, I guess, follow-through type of tools?
Well, again, it depends on the situation or the scenario of what they're dealing with. But, you know, if they present something and we come up with an idea, then oftentimes we'll suggest, okay, let's try this for the next week. Let me know how it goes. And if it doesn't work, if you come back in here and you're like, that was ridiculous, that doesn't work.
Horrible.
Yeah, horrible, horrible idea. Then we'll say, okay, back to the drawing board. Let's come up with more solutions.
What's a good example of a solution?
Oh, goodness. Okay, let's
Sorry,
see.
In the spot.
Let me think. A particular issue, maybe we're looking at, you know, one of the things is a child perhaps who has a diagnosis of ADHD.
Okay.
A lot of times parents are frustrated with organization or they forget steps in what the parent deems as a simple process, you know. So what we might try to do is let's break down the steps.
Okay.
And it can be as, I'll use an example, like, let's say, brush your teeth.
Yes.
Dang
it.
Right? You go to the bathroom, you get your toothbrush, you put toothpaste on the toothbrush. I know it sounds a little... It
you have to
sounds
be more
little,
detailed.
Right, very detailed.
Okay.
And sometimes just talking that through will help the child, like,
right,
you know, because... Oftentimes it's like, go brush your teeth. Your child gets, and this might not even be a child who has ADHD.
Just
it happens to kids all the time, right? Goes into the bathroom. It's like, wait, what did I come in here
what
for?
Is this?
Kind of happens when you're in your 40s too.
Yeah, 30s, 40s, 50s, and so on.
So, you know, just helping them break down simple tasks sometimes is very beneficial. And so we'll say, okay, let's pick one that, and I know that's a very easy one that I picked, but say there's something specific that they're having a hard time with. Let's break these down. Let's write them out. Maybe we want to make a little poster board that you can put up in your room or, you know.
So they see it and visualize it too.
Right. You know, maybe it's right after school coming home to do their homework. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's getting, you know, a binder. Maybe it's getting one of those agendas or something. You know, just
schedule.
Yes. So let's do that. Okay. See how it goes. And then come back and let's talk about how it went.
Wow. Okay. And also too, second I was thinking about is when you deal with kids that are already coming in on medication or kids that parents are thinking, do I need to medicate my child or not, how do you approach that with a parent and a child?
Sure, sure. Well, for, as a, like, generally, again, I would probably suggest with children, you try therapy first.
Okay.
And if that doesn't work, then you add in a consult with a psychiatrist secondarily. So, again, now if we're talking about kind of maybe something that's more in a moderate zone. If you're dealing with something that is severe, then the most appropriate protocol would be to consult with a psychiatrist right away.
Okay.
So I'm talking about like self-harming behaviors, suicidal ideation, that type of thing. But if a child's coming in, and again, maybe it's separation anxiety, let's try to do some you know, tools and therapy first.
Yes.
And we will reassess in a few weeks, see how they're doing. Is this helping? Is this not? And again, how much is it impairing the child's ability to function at school, at home, how is it affecting the family, that sort of thing.
Wow.
And then, you know, if parents are really adverse to medication, we absolutely will respect parents' decision. That's, you know, they're the parent.
Sure.
But again, I will say to parents sometimes, again, if it's a more seeming to be a little more extreme situation, again, you can consult with a psychiatrist. It does not mean you have to sign up for medication.
Okay. That's the biggest thing parents, I think, don't understand is when you're seeing a psychologist, psychiatrist, I'm here to get medicated.
Right.
No, sometimes let's figure out what we can do instead of that.
Sure. And sometimes, good psychiatrists oftentimes even have other ideas.
Oh,
good. And, you know, holistic care is another avenue. And again, I see pediatricians, I see chiropractors, I see psychiatrists, therapists, all taking this holistic approach to, maybe you want to try that. But it's all about, you know, really getting this out on the table. What's the issue? Trying some things. Okay. And, again, sometimes it's trial and error. Sometimes it's just trial.
Well, I think some of the, like you mentioned, the holistic approach, do you incorporate some of what they're doing or their initial analysis is how much they're exercising, how much they're eating, what they're eating,
absolutely.
And how does that work? Why is that important?
Well, I mean, children's brains are developing.
Yes.
And so, you know, what you put in sometimes is what you get out. And that's true. I and part of our assessment, we will ask, you know, how much is the child sleeping? Sometimes parents forget that children are not shrunken down adults.
Yes.
And maybe we can get by with 8 hours of sleep, but your five-year-old should probably get somewhere between, you know, 10 and 12.
Wow.
And yeah, and then you're,
okay.
Then they're not getting that. And you're like, they're argumentative. They're not cooperative in the mornings. They won't get out of bed.
Grouchy.
Grouchy.
Got it. The non-medical term grouchy.
Right. Exactly.
How about nutrition? What's a good nutrition balance per se?
Same thing. If your kid's eating, you know, Takis at lunch, then we might want to take a look at what they're doing.
How would that affect their overall emotional, psychological health?
Well, they know. Well, again, as they need food to fuel their brain, and they're at school for such long hours, and they're learning. And again, they probably have to be quiet and sit still. And so if you're flooding them with sugar, or they're flooding themselves, sometimes like teenagers, for instance,
exactly.
A lot of times they're just feeding themselves at school.
Red Bull, sugar.
Exactly.
Caffeine, Starbucks are good.
And then they're wondering why they're having trouble paying attention in class, lacking motivation, feeling tired during the day.
No.
You know, we know that sugar spike happens and then they crash and they're falling asleep in fourth period or whatever. You know, so we take a good look at this. And sometimes just doing it, we call it psychoeducation with the parents and with the children.
What is that?
Psychoeducation?
Yes.
Just providing information to them that educates them on what they're doing and how that might be affecting them.
Got it.
So we'll talk about that. And again, sometimes talking about it, then they're like, okay,
that
I get
makes
it.
Sense
and there's,
now.
There's this magic thing that happens where sometimes kids will listen to somebody else and not necessarily parents.
It's not magical. Consistent. Very consistent.
Right.
Myself.
Exactly.
Okay. And a lot of it, too, with that nutrition and how much sleep they're doing. How about exercise? How is that important to them?
Exercise is very important as well. Again, it just promotes their brain activity. And, you know, think of all the things, like even adults, I'll say, I think exercising outside is great because as opposed to like in a room with four walls, you know.
And treadmill.
Right. Because you're getting all of this other stimuli that happens in our natural environment that our bodies really crave. And so kids should be playing soccer. They should be running. They should be playing imagination and making mud pies and doing all of those things. And I know we live, again, in a society that's very technologically advanced.
And yes.
So, you know, I think a little bit of that, actually, my thing is, I say a little of that is okay because we also don't want them to get far behind. They're going to end up in high school with a Chromebook and not know how to use it.
Exactly.
So,
that's the problem.
Right.
That's a transition from a paper book as we grew up, and that's how we learned a paper book and pen and paper versus an iPad, a stick in your thumbs.
Exactly.
So if you're going to learn this way, in my sense, again, I'm just a chiropractor, that's how you're going to learn, continue to understand, that's how you're going to progress through school down the line.
Right.
So I think that's important, like you mentioned, but the play is so huge in the sense where I do a lot of talks and I do a lot of on workshops, is when you move, your body produces neurology to your brain chemistry to your adrenals. At that point, your hormones and your chemical balances stay normal.
Exactly.
You tolerate stress.
Physiologically.
I know the stuff, but they may not be chiropractors or people with big student loans out there,
So, you know, to keep all of the good-feeling chemicals in the brain up. So sometimes I'll give, I don't have one right now, but like a snow globe. Analogy. So, you know, if you're not moving, if you're not feeding your body well, then it's like all the little snow is at the bottom, you know?
Exactly.
And so when you go out into, and play and do all of those things, it shakes up and it makes you feel so much better. It also helps you sleep. Children need outside time, and it will help them sleep.
It's amazing that people don't, and it's something else, 'cause we're so used to being indoors, I think, in school and at home. Mm-hmm. That we lose that ability to go for a walk.
Right. And then again, from a perspective for mental health, the other thing is, like I mentioned earlier about play being a child's language, if you ever listen to your kid playing imagination, you'll hear things. Mm. You'll see things. And a lot of times they can work out their own stuff just in their own play. Right.
Give them that space.
Exactly. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. Anything else to add? We've done a couple things already, but we'll probably do more other interviews with you.
What's
a good thing to let people know, I guess, big picture-wise with therapy, especially with that children therapy?
I think that we should continue to move, and I see this happening, move towards this ideology that there is no shame in coming into seeing a therapist at all. We are normal people too, just like you. We have our own stuff going on as well. But when you come in here, you have your space, and you typically have people that you could relate to. Like I mentioned earlier about me, I'm a mom too. And so that's why a lot of us here have a heart for children, because we get it that it can be difficult. Mm. And then on the other end of the spectrum, I say empathy. Empathize with your child. Being a child is hard sometimes. And so we want to try to understand them. Our gap somehow gets so far away as we forget.
It becomes very fuzzy.
It does. It does. Yeah. It really does. And that's, again, normal to happen. So we got to bring ourselves back. We got to be present and just really relate with our children. And I think the way to do that is through empathy.
I can't say any better. So, Norm, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Another episode of Cook Friday Show, and we'll see you on the next one. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, this interview with Narina, our first interview here, allows you to understand the stereotype of having your child see a therapist should not be embarrassing and should actually allow you to understand your child better. We're not born parents. I'm a parent myself, a co-parent too. A lot of it is we have to learn how to be parents. Sometimes seeing a therapist for a child gives you tools and solutions to help communicate with them and help them sometimes build self-esteem and self-confidence. As a result, they have normal activities with school, their education becomes somewhat easier or relaxed, and also they'll still have stress in life. They know how to deal with them, either verbalize and deal with them on their own, so their overall body and their overall health stays healthy. Realize too, a lot of it is the kids need play. I've read books on this too. A lot of it is with play, they early communicate with their friends and overall learn the neurology behind it to stay healthy, again, as they develop, to deal with more and more stressors as school gets harder, as activities get harder, as your life becomes more difficult. Realize as a child, we're no longer children anymore, to where as a child at 5 years old, that's their whole life. That's all they know. So as they develop, they're building more and more things in their life, sometimes it can be stressors. And learning with a therapist like Narina how to deal with them can only help you as a parent understand your child better and keep both of you happy. All right? Hope you enjoyed this episode. We'll do more with Miss Narina, and we'll see you on the next one. Have a good day.